The Wall Street Journal once called him the most connected person you've never heard of. He's worked with Sir Elton John, Elon Musk, and has shut down museums in Florence to host private parties. He is seriously one of the most interesting people I've ever met, but he has an absolute wealth of information to share with us, so I cannot wait for you to listen to this podcast to learn more about building a personal brand, establishing relationships, keeping mystery in live events, and so much more with my guest, Steve Sims.
This is for you, the online business owner who wants to maximize your profit and multiply your impact. I'm Shanna, host of the Community Creators Podcast. I've spent over a decade helping top brands and entrepreneurs create thriving communities that increase their reach, retention, and revenue. This podcast is where I share my best insights and invite you into conversations with the world's leading community creators and cultivators. So grab your favorite mug, fill it up, and let's get started.
Earlier this year, I was speaking at an event, Traffic and Conversion, when I made a friend named Atiba. And Atiba told me, "You need to know Steve Sims." Sure enough, he was right. Steve and I started chatting and carried on conversations throughout the event where I got to know some of his amazing and almost unbelievable stories about how he has made things happen for some of the biggest names that you would know, like household names like Sir Elton John, Elon Musk. He's made things happen at places like the Vatican. You wouldn't believe the stories that Steve has to share. But what I found most interesting about him were the mysterious community events that he runs and the mastermind that he leads and how he has built this personal brand around building relationships and creating trust. Steve, I am so glad that you're here because I met you when I was speaking at Traffic and Conversion. And I remember Atiba being like, "You have to meet this guy." And I think at first we were talking about like Harley Davidsons because I always wanted one or something. So we got onto motorcycles and then we ended up talking about bourbon and then we ended up talking about community. And then I learned that you are seriously one of the most interesting people and you have incredible stories. So I'm really excited because I know you have so much value to bring. This is totally unscripted. I have no idea where we are going to go with this conversation, which gets me really excited. But I am most excited to introduce you to my community because I think you're going to open their eyes and really get them thinking in a new way about community and relationship and what that means and what it makes possible. So thanks for coming and hanging out with us.
Well, that's a lot of pressure, but okay, I'll try.
Yeah, try your best. Okay, so before we dive in, tell me, what is your favorite community you've ever been a part of and why?
Wow, I've been part of tons of communities because I'm aggravated for that unfair advantage. So I don't know of many masterminds or communities I've not actually spent my dollars on. But my favorite one, shallow plug, is Sims Distillery, the one that I built, because I found there's so many communities helped you with your finances or with your marketing or with your health or with your mindset or with your relationships or with parenting. But none of them looked after you as a complete unit. And I found that was the thing missing. You mentioned TNC. Is there a better marketing summit in America than TNC? Those guys are brilliant, but you don't come out of there going, okay, this is how I make money. Now, what do I do to keep it and avoid tax? Because it doesn't answer that. It doesn't tell you how to make sure that you divide the time between your work and your family so that you don't end up becoming like a lot of entrepreneurs, incredibly wealthy and divorced. So we actually, out of being completely aggravated, and Henry's 26 and I'm 58, we both needed different things, but we needed to look at how they fit as a unit. So shallow plug, the one I designed, Sims Distillery.
I think oftentimes is where the best communities are born because you have the experience of knowing this is what other communities lack, this is what people are missing. And then at the end of the day, you come in and you're like, let me create something that I need for myself, which means not only are you coming from a really informed and not systematic approach of like, oh, this is how you build a mastermind or a community, touch on all these topics and you'll win, but you also have more care and passion because you need it for yourself.
Yeah, that's not just about the community. That's us as entrepreneurs, isn't it? We solve our problems and then sell the solution to someone else. The classic is Elon Musk that couldn't understand why it took 5 days to transfer money from one US bank account to another US bank account. So he invented PayPal and then sold it to everybody else. So as entrepreneurs, we solve our problems and then look to the community that has the same issue.
You're exactly right. And you are a problem solver for people and have been for a long time. And so I think the way I describe you is you are the person that for years was just, if you want it done, just talk to Steve. If it feels impossible to get it done, we'll talk to Steve. He can get it done. So talk to me about that, because you don't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to have great friendships with Elon Musk and Elton John and be able to coordinate stuff at the Vatican. And like all of these crazy things that you have made possible for people. How did you get started even building that kind of trust in relationships?
Most of my life and most of my answers is going to start the exact same way. I was pissed off. As entrepreneurs, we get aggravated about something and then we find the solution. Now, it's very important for you to be pissed off. If you're pissed off with your ROI, if you're pissed off with your relationships, if you're pissed off with the paint scheme of your bedroom, you'll do something about it. But it takes that aggravation to actually cause you to do something. And I grew up as a bricklayer in East London. I never had any money, but I was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and going home at 8 o'clock at night. Rained on, crapped on, cut up with the bricks, hurt, bruised, falling off a ladder. So I knew about hard work, but I wasn't making money. So I wasn't working smart. And so what I did was I was aggravated enough is I wanted to have a conversation with someone that had money. And quite similarly, in the early stages, it was a case of me walking up to someone in a bar that had a Rolex on. Oh my God. If I saw someone with a Rolex, I thought they were like God themselves. Of course, our ideologies are like tags have changed over the years. But at the time, if they had a new car, I wanted to talk. How come you got a new car? Now you can imagine me, 240 pound, a biker ugly, coming at you in a bar going, how come you got money and I haven't? Wasn't the smoothest way to get the answer. So I learned very early on from not getting the answers that I wanted, that the problem wasn't the question, the problem was the delivery. And Jay Abraham always says, if you want a fantastic answer, ask a fantastic question. So I learned very early on how to communicate with people. But again, I'm big and ugly. So I thought to myself, how can I make these people want to interact with me? Because I want the answer. I want to know how you're making money. I want to know how you work on relationships, on contracts, how you hire, how you I wanted all of these answers before we had YouTube or podcasting. And this was in the 90s. So I thought to myself, in order for me to get your attention, I've got to bring something to the party. So if someone had a new car, I would literally try and find out who was the best place in the area that detailed cars. And I would go up and I'd say, hey, I saw your car outside. You're probably going to want to keep that spick and span. I don't own the company, but I've heard great things about Jimmy's detail shop down the road. And it would start off like that. And I was a nightclub bouncer. I know it's a stretch for you to imagine that, but I was the doorman and I got a PhD on watching interaction, humor interaction. And there were the people that pretended they had money. And then there were the people that had money and they walk and talk differently. And I started to recognize that. And then I'd go up to them going, hey, there's a new nightclub open on Thursday. Do you want me to see if I can get you in? Now, if I could be your solution, and here's a very important thing for every entrepreneur. If you are the solution to somebody's problem, it doesn't matter what you look like, what you sound, what your website looks, none of that is relevant. Think about it at 1 o'clock in the morning when you got a headache. When was the last time you went to the bathroom cabinet, pulled out your headache tablets and you went, nah, I don't like the brand logo. Don't like the color scheme. It offends me. Or I don't like the packaging. You don't. You care that solves a problem. And as long as it solves a problem, you don't care what the logo is, what the packaging is. So early on, I realized I've got to bring something to the party. Now, it started off me getting people in the nightclubs, people getting into private parties, people getting into fashion shows, movie premieres, car launches, and it grew. And of course, as entrepreneurs, we don't settle. Okay, I know how a millionaire got his first million, but I'd love to know how a billionaire got that first billion. I'd like to know how a multi-billionaire does this. I'd like to know how the head of a country looks at people that he could. So my thirst for this knowledge carried on. And for 25 years, I ran a very private concierge firm for quite simply the richest, most powerful people in the planet. And you're right, I've worked with Elon Musk, Elton John, Andrea Bocelli, the Vatican, all over the planet, from Japan to LA. So, but every time I did it, it wasn't because I wanted to walk the red carpet at a fashion show or go backstage at a concert or drive a Formula One car. None of that was of interest to me. I wanted to install enough memory in you that I could phone you up 2 days later and go, Roger, did you enjoy playing drums with Guns N' Roses? And he'd be like, yeah, it was great. Hey, let's have lunch. And he would want to have lunch with me because I was already the solution to everything that he couldn't even dream. And that's when I could sit down and go, how did you buy your first yacht? Hey, I'm interested. How do you fire people? And so I went on that thirst for 25 years, got approached by someone at a party in New York that just happened to be part of this little company called Simon & Schuster, which I'd never heard of before at the time. And they went, you should write a book. And I was like, yeah, sure. And they actually emailed me. And a week later, with no overview, no draft, no nothing, they gave me a book deal. And I wrote my first book, Bluefishing. And all of a sudden, it was a mixed bag of goodies because all of a sudden I was known. And this was tough because for 25 years, the Wall Street Journal actually quoted it best. They turned around and tried to do a reveal on me. Didn't do very well, but they said that I was the most connected person in the planet you've never heard of. And the funny thing was they even spelt my last name wrong. My last name's got one M. They put two M's. So I loved being in the background, no one knowing who I was while I was just getting into the playgrounds of the rich and famous. But the book killed that. And all of a sudden, people started to know who I was.
Yeah, I can imagine that shifted things a lot. And I love how you talked about, it's not about the question, it's about the delivery and really looking at like, how can you build trust by solving problems and coming to the table with value from the beginning to build that trust and relationship? It's interesting because we homeschool our kids and we're pulling them out. They were doing like a supplemental thing and we're pulling them out and we're going to just do it at home. And I was talking to somebody at a gathering yesterday and I just said, the most important thing that our kids can learn is how to be people of integrity, people who can communicate effectively and build solid relationships. Because if they can't do that, which I think this day and age, kids aren't learning how to do that, how to communicate well, how to build relationships. If they can do that, it opens up so many doors for them. And I think you're absolute evidence of that, of how following curiosity, being willing to ask questions and fail, but really observing and paying attention to what's happening around you and learning from that so that you can go and improve and get, ultimately, it's a desire to get what you want. But in that pursuit of getting what you want, you learn who you want to become and who you need to be in order to fulfill on that.
You're 100% right. We're in a world today where we can get educated on absolutely everything. You could learn Russian in 6 months. You could learn what you need to build a bridge, dismantle a Harley Davidson. You could learn anything you wish from everything, from AI to YouTube. But the power to connect a human being to another human being is a muscle. You have to train that. You have to practice that. And the art of communication is only going to be more required, especially if you think about it. A few years ago, we lost that ability. We went through COVID where not only were we not connecting, we came out of it and we didn't know how to connect. Now, we've never been in a period of our life with more ways to connect and we've never been more disconnected. And quite simply, how many people don't want to engage in a conversation or are nervous to engage in a conversation? And if you take the conversation out of any kind of connection, you don't have a connection, you have a transaction.
Yeah, which feels like a transaction. And so it doesn't lead to long-term relationships with those customers. It doesn't lead to repeat customers, which we talk about retention all the time on this podcast. But I think people ask me all the time, Shanna, how have you built the business that you've built? How are you able to do this? And I'm like, relationships. It has always been about relationships. It's why I've never really had to run ads or do launches or anything like that, because I have the right relationships and I solve a very specific problem. And so people know if you have problems keeping your customers or running a community, like you have to talk to Shanna. She's your person. And so building that kind of brand, I guess, if you will, building that kind of brand that I used to think in my early days of entrepreneurship over a decade ago was my color scheme and my logo, right? That was my brand. It is the exact opposite of that brand, is that reputation.
Yeah, I did. I'm very fortunate, or people are daft enough to actually pay me to speak on a lot of big stages. And recently, a lot of the places that I've been speaking at has actually been on the topic of branding. And if you take it back to its roots, branding was when you actually stuck a hot iron on cattle. And it was a case of you could rely on that cattle because that was the best meat. And then it went from picking cattle to that branding being put on leather. The finest leather has this mark on it. So in the old days, it was a logo and it was a mark that installed that kind of trust factor. But now it's a trigger. Someone says something like Coca-Cola, Nike, Trump, Tesla, Apple, Shana. You don't need to be in the conversation for that person to have a reaction. And what that person's reaction is and what that person says about you is your brand. A brand today is what people say about you when you are no longer in the room. And it's therefore it's not a color code, it's not a logo, it's what you stand for and what you bring to the table.
And you have one, whether you know it or not. And I think that is the most important thing. Whether you are just starting out in business or you're not even a business owner, every individual has a brand. There is a representation of you out in the world of how people perceive you based on their interaction with you. That is ultimately your brand. And being intentional about cultivating that, I think, is so undervalued, and making sure that you're authentic to it, that you understand who it is that you want to be known as. Because for a long time, there's been an epidemic in the online marketing space where it worked for this person. So give me the formula. I'm going to do it the way you did it. Say it the way that you say it, because that is going to sell my course. That's going to sell my membership. That's the thing. And people don't realize that it worked for that person because it aligned with their unique brand, their own authenticity. And so when you do it, it feels incongruent. It feels off. It doesn't feel like something I can trust. And yet we don't take the time to really figure out and test, because we're not in it for the long game. We're in it for the quick win. So we want the shortcuts. We won't take the time to test and go, what does it look like for me to authentically sell this product? What does it look like for me to speak on stage? You work with a lot of speakers, getting them booked on stages. But what is me being on stage? How does that look different than Steve being on stage?
And the trouble is that stage can literally just be around the breakfast table conversing with your husband, your wife, your partner. So in today, we don't have to look at it as being on the Madison Square Garden stage. The stage can be delivering a Monday morning meeting or just delivering a proposal. We've got a situation. I remember when I got into speaking, and I really didn't want to get into speaking, but I realized it was the best way for me to actually populate my message and to get followers that understood me. Because for an hour, I've got your entire attention. So I realized that very early on, and I worked for it. But a friend of mine is a comedian. He's not very funny, so he needs to get another job. But I remember him talking to me about my speaking. And he was actually at an event where I spoke. And he said, there's two things you need to know before you get on that stage. He said, one, and everyone knows this, I could ask you, and you're a seasoned speaker, so you're going to come out with the answer. You're going to go, know your audience. Okay. Everyone knows that answer. If you're getting on stage, know your audience. Okay. The second thing I'd never heard of before, he said, know the temperature of the room. And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, know the mood that they're in. He said, as a comedian and not an A-list comedian, I would have my set up. The person would go on before me, suck, or say something racial or sexist, or just get booed off the stage. Now I'm walking onto a very hostile room. Now, they want to be there to laugh, but now they're in a bad mood. So I've got to work to get them back out to ground zero so I can take them from there. But he said, you've got to know the temperature of the room. Now, if you think about today, especially post-COVID, Trump, the COVID vaccines, we're now in a political year. We don't trust anything. The temperature of the room today, i.e. anyone looking at the internet, is we don't trust what we first see. But if we're real, if we've got crystal clarity on, hey, this is who I am, people can make a decision. I believe there's three kinds of people in the planet. And this podcast will validate that. It will prove me right. There are people on this podcast that I guarantee you love me. I'm not being egotistical, but I guarantee you there's people listening to this going, that guy, that he gets it. He's right. I really like his spirit. And they're on my side. They're Team Sims. Guarantee you on this podcast, there are people that are probably already left or maybe just like begrudgingly listening because they like you. And they're listening to me going, I can't understand what he's saying. He's too shouty. Look at him. He looks ugly. You know, oh God, he thinks he's, they don't like me. They are not Team Steve. And that's fine. You can't attract everyone. When you try to attract everyone, you attract no one. But those people that are already Camp Sims, I'm fine with. But there's a third group of people. And that group, you've created. Not you, Shana, but the people listening to, they've created. Because they've tried to woolly that copy. They've tried to not stand up for what they believe in. They've tried to make sure that they don't trigger anybody. They're trying to be so vanilla that people are now sitting on the fence going, I'm not sure about this person. He's trying to tell. And like you were saying before, they've taken the cookie cutter mold of what worked for Hermosi or Ryan or Perry Belcher or anyone like this. And they've gone, I'm going to work that out. But they're not those people. So they're trying to wear a suit that's not cut for them. And as human beings, our gut is actually very intelligent. We don't trust our eyes anymore. CGI is fantastic. We don't trust our ears. Auto-tune is absolutely fantastic. That moment you get something in the pit of your stomach and you go, I'm not sure about this person. There's something that's just not right. I don't know what it is, but I got a nagging feeling. All of those things are called instincts. It's what's kept us alive for millions of years. Start trusting them. And as a person, start realizing that they're getting stronger and they're becoming in control. So I want to say things. I'm not trying to shock, be inappropriate, scare anyone, but I do want myself to be impossible to misunderstand. So you can make the decision, Camp Sims or no thank you, Sims.
Yeah, impossible to misunderstand. And we talk about this a lot with community building, but I encourage people that their community strategy should be the same. People teach all the time that community is about acceptance and kindness. And I'm like, no, that's the exact opposite of a strong community. A strong community has a very clear mission, purpose, and cause, very clear culture, beliefs, behaviors, and boundaries. And we define them so clearly that you feel like you're supposed to be a part of that community before you ever join. You're like, well, of course I need to be in the distillery because I am that type of person. My people are there. I need to be there with my people. The community's job isn't to convince you and to form you into that kind of person. It's to wave the flag to say, we're over here. If you're like us, we're over here. And guess what? If you're not like us, you're welcome to not walk through this door. And if you get here and you thought, well, maybe I want to be like them, and then you get in and realize you're not like them, you're welcome to walk right back out the door. But we're not going to shift to accommodate and appease you and your desires.
So beautifully said. And also, it doesn't have to be perfect. That's the other thing. In fact, imperfections are just proof that you're real. I don't want to meet anyone that's not got any bruises or scars because that's validation they tried. If you look at a brand like Harley Davidson, you mentioned it at the beginning. I've got Harley Davidson, so I can tell you from ownership, they're not perfect. You could buy any other brand and it would be far superior in terms of technical work and quality and stuff. But there's a brand that associates with Harley Davidson that every other brand that's trying to be that can't buy into. They're basically agricultural vehicles. But you buy into a Harley Davidson because it was one of the originators of Americana. We stood for freedom, Levi jeans, drinking a beer and looking at a beautiful woman as you ride down the road. It stood for that lifestyle of the wind in your hair, that kind of thing. People buy Harley Davidsons to identify with that life of I'm free, I'm standing out, you're not going to cage me in. Even though Harley Davidson is a hugely imperfect brand and item. So it doesn't have to be perfect. As long as it stands for what it stands for and it aligns with what you stand for, people will accept the imperfections.
If you want to create a thriving online community, you need to join my free Community Creators Hub. Inside of this free hub, you're going to get access to a searchable database of every episode of this podcast, as well as my favorite free resources, like my 77 plus connection ideas list, community manager best practices guide, and scripts for video messaging, plus so much more. Discover the tools and the resources that I rely on to grow and manage thriving online communities. Just go to communitycreatorshub.com to get your free access. Yeah, and it's going from that, this is a product, to this is a lifestyle. This is a value system, which is why when I was, I can't remember if I was 7 or 9 years old and all I wanted for my birthday was a Harley. It was not, I want a motorcycle. It was, I want a Harley. I want a Harley L series. And I still remember being so disappointed when I opened up this little toy Harley and you pulled the red helmet on the back and it went across the table. And I didn't understand like why they thought that was what I wanted, but that's the strength of a brand. And I know for you, you've experienced that because one of the things that we talked about when we were together was how you do these secretive events around the country. And I think it's so fascinating, but how that got started, you were like, well, I wanted to go somewhere or my wife wanted me gone. I can't remember what it was. And so I just put a post out and said, here's where I'm going to be. I'm not going to tell you what we're doing. I don't even really know yet. But if you want to be a part of this, pay me a couple $1,000 or whatever it was and show up. And people jumped in. They showed up for you. You created an amazing experience for them. And then now you do that over and over again. So can you talk a little bit about like how that came to be? And I think if anything, people who are listening, I want you to hear, this is the value of relationships. This is the value of building trust. This is the value of being somebody who's always bringing value to the table consistently and having a personal brand that people go, yeah, okay, anything that Steve does, I'm in.
Yeah, it's hard to make that leap. And I didn't know if it was going to work or not, but I wanted to try. And that's the scary bit when people don't try. It was actually my daughter. I was having an argument with my daughter. She was a teenager. So all you girls know what you're like when you're teenagers to your dads. You're scary and horrible. And it was coming up to my birthday and I didn't want to be anywhere near her. She'd been taken over by the devil incarnate. I just wanted to get away. So you're right. I literally thought, well, I live in LA. I'm going to go down to San Diego. I'm just going to get away for the weekend. And then I thought, well, hang on a minute. Who wants to join me? So I wanted to test my own credibility. And I thought, what can I get away with saying as little as possible that will still entice you to come in? Because a lot of people go, oh, come here because you'll get this. It starts here and we've got this person. And they give you everything. And that's what you base your decision on. So I turned around and I went, I don't know what we're going to learn, but spend 2 days with me for $2,000. Click here. It was on Facebook and I had a PayPal link. And we got like about 12 people signed up immediately. And I'm like, well, this is strange. I'm not sure I would have ever paid $2,000 to, we don't know where it is. We know the dates. We know it's in San Diego, but I don't know the venue. I don't know what I'm going to learn. I don't know who's going to be there. So I literally phoned up those people and I went, why did you do it? And they went, well, we've got a problem with marketing and we've got a problem with relationships and we've got a problem of delivering wow. And I'm going to be asking you that question at that 2-day event. And I thought, And again, backpedal back to the headache tablets. If I can solve your problem, if I can promise you that you're going to come to one of my events, we now call them speakeasies. One of the attendees went, this is like a speakeasy. You don't know much about it. That's where all the fun is. So that's how we got the name the speakeasy. But I thought if I can focus on your problem and solve your problem in 2 days, do you care what I look like? So what we do now is we have these speakeasies all over America. Last one was in Venice Beach. Oh, God, we had Jay Abraham, Todd Murphy, Perry Belcher, Jason Fladlin. We always get some interesting people in there. We got the head of marketing for Alpine Star Sports on influencer marketing. And we also got a former gang member that was sentenced to life for murder that now actually works for the government on reformation programs inside so that when you go into prison, you don't come out a better criminal. You actually come out taking that hustle from illegal to legal. So we always get interesting people come in. And we did that one in Venice. Nobody knew who was turning up. And so we phone up everyone, find out what that problem is. And then I go into my little digital Rolodex and find out who can I bring in to answer that problem. And our next one is the 30th of September and the 1st of October. In New York City, we're going Manhattan again, and we just bring people in. So every time someone signs up, we don't tell them, oh, so-and-so's going to be there. We go, you've signed up. What's your problem? And if we can't answer that problem, or we don't feel we can, or more importantly, if we don't feel you're the right kind of person to be in the room, we say, hey, not this time. And we refund your money and you don't come.
It's so cool because I think oftentimes as entrepreneurs, we think we have to be the solution to all the problems. And we lack the humility to go, I can't solve this problem for this person, but who do I know that can? And inviting that person into the room. I don't know what the culture is that we have bred in this industry where we have to be the experts in all things. We have to be the problem solver. But many people listening to this are natural connectors, natural relationship builders. They may not be an expert in a certain field, and they've reached maybe what they feel like is the end of their capacity in serving their community, but they have yet to tap the shoulder of experts. And I think that is a huge asset. And I also think that the beautiful thing of just talking to people, we say this all the time, get on the phone with your customers. Get on the phone with your, if you are not talking, I don't care if you have 10,000 people in your paid memberships, like some of my clients do. If you are not getting on the phone with the individuals in your program and talking to them about what is working and what is not working, what challenges are you struggling with, you will become obsolete at the end of the day. You have to be hearing from people and not making assumptions about how they need to be helped and how you can best serve them.
Yeah, you're one phone call away from being replaced by someone who will phone them. And that's the classic one. Atiba's a fine example by this. Your network is your net worth. Today, I could lose everything. But as long as I've got a phone and I've still got my database, I'm back in business 2 hours later. So today, with everything moving transactionally and everyone, well, not everyone, but the idiots out there not valuing the benefit of relationships. And again, my angle is I always say to everyone, I am the greatest student in the planet. I'm not an expert, but I am a constant student. And I want to bring, so when someone comes to me and says, oh yeah, I want to do this on marketing. Oh, I want to do this on scaling. I want to sell my company. I've got Roland, Jay, Custom. I've got anyone that I need in my circle that I can bring in to answer the questions. I don't have to have the answer. I just have to have the connection.
Which you leverage in a beautiful way. I think it's awesome. So tell me a little bit about the event, because we have a lot of people who are saying live events are dead. And we do have a lot of people in our space that are value stackers. I'll just put it that way. Value stackers of this person's going to be there, and that person's going to be there. And here's all the reasons you need to be there. And in some ways, I think we have lost the ability to surprise and delight and to leave curiosity and mystery to work to our advantage because of this concept of the value stack of just layering, layering, layering. In fact, I think most people who really leverage a strong value stack end up overpromising and under-delivering in the first place. But so can you talk just a little bit about how you make sure that's a great experience and how the mystery enables you to set the stage for surprise and delight in a way that essentially ensures that people leave going, wow, that was awesome.
So I've never grown up. I'm a 5-year-old. I'm curious constantly, and I hate boredom. So we're in our 7th year of doing these Sim speakeasies. And every time we do one, I think to myself, well, not going to do one of those again. Not going to be able to top that. But you don't have to top it when you make it different. So for a start, the one key thing we did, and it's amazing how many lessons we learn from mistakes, isn't it? But when I did my first one, and probably up to my first 3 or 4, I was looking at hotels. And I was like, well, if we stay at that hotel and host it in that conference room, and then all they got to do is go downstairs into it, and that'd be good. But hotels, they have F&B beverages, charges, and they charge you for the room, and you can't bring in food from outside. And all of it, it's expensive. So in the early stages, I was like, I can't afford to do it there. So I'm going to rent a yacht. I'm going to rent a penthouse. I'm going to rent an art gallery. I'm going to rent a motorcycle garage. I even threw one once in the Bunny Ranch brothel in Reno. And I also threw one in the Tesla plant in Silicon Valley. So they're always in these. But all of a sudden, you say it about brand, people started to go, he never throws them in a hotel room. And people love that. So I'm like, okay, so we never throw them there. When we did the last one in Venice Beach, we had this really cool house right next to the beach in Venice Boardwalk. And then the last one we did before that was in New Orleans, and we did it on Bourbon Street, and we did it on the top floor, the old parlor house of the Absinthe House on Bourbon Street, and we ended it. We always try to get people that you would never, ever normally get to communicate with. So we get judges in, we get gang members in, we get outlaws, we get different people coming in. As I say, the Reno, we had a panel of five prostitutes talking to us about body language. Who better to know about body language than people that rely on their industry with it? But in New Orleans, we had one of the last two voodoo priestesses come in to talk about myth and distraction of what you're actually talking about. Now, we're talking about voodoo, which to a lot of people is a scary subject. But she talked about misdirection, about how other religions would say things about voodoo to try and get you to think differently. Like one of the classics, have you ever practiced voodoo? But if I ask you, if there was a character in voodoo, what would that character be that pops into your head?
I think about witchish kind of person who's sitting in the dark and has a voodoo doll, like the little doll that they're sticking pins in. It's like this mysterious person.
And to a lot of people, they think about the big black guy with the half skull makeup and the top hat.
Yeah, he's in that Disney movie. He's like playing a voodoo character.
He's not in voodoo. That was actually made for like James Bond, for one of James Bond movies to give a character. And so you've got all this misdirection and these lies that tell people, oh, you don't want to go there because they look like that. So in our business, when we're trying to communicate to someone about coaching or about relationships, you'll get the competitors throw misdirection into your feed. So we had a voodoo priestess talking to us about how she responds to that misdirection. So we get some really strange people that you would never normally talk to, talk about the problems you have and give an out-of-the-box idea on how to handle it. We did one in New York many years ago, and we had D-Rock. Have you ever come across D-Rock? D-Rock is Gary, or was, he's actually just left to start his own new career. So good luck, D-Rock, man. But D-Rock was the head of his videography and would be the guy that followed Gary around and then edit them into the videos that made Gary famous on the socials. How do you get the message across in 30 seconds on a crowded street? We all try to find like perfect air. Now, of course, because of Gary, a lot of people do these walking down the beach kind of videos. But it was D-Rock that actually started focusing on that, bringing Gary literally to the streets to spout his message, and then how to cut it and edit it, landscape, vertical, all these different kind of things. We bring those kind of people in. We had Jeffrey Madoff. I don't know if you've heard of Madoff Productions, but Jeffrey Madoff is the guy behind Victoria's Secrets and Ralph Lauren. How to tell a story and build an identity in 30 seconds advert. Now, the second a Gap advert comes on, you know it's Gap within 10 seconds. It doesn't have to say Gap. It's got a feeling. Target, exact same thing. Victoria's Secrets, obviously a Victoria's Secret. Ralph Lauren, the horse, the hair, the Western kind of shirt. How to create a story and an identity in 30 seconds from the man that does it for Victoria's Secrets and Ralph Lauren. So those were the kind of people that we would bring in. But you never knew they were coming in. The problem's still the same. Hey, we know we have to do social. How do I do social? Well, let me get you the head of Ralph Lauren to answer that question. So I was always very fortunate of being able to bring the people in that you never normally would be able to be in the room with that does it on a monstrous scale, but to bring it down to isolate it to your problem today. And therefore, people would leave going, I just got a lesson from a voodoo priestess. Ask Atiba about the voodoo priestess. It shocked the pants out of him because when she started, and I've got to admit, it made me a bit nervous, she started doing a chant through the room to allow the bad spirits to leave the room and the good spirits to. And there were a lot of people in that room going, what the hell are we doing? But the same thing was said when I did it in Reno and I got the lineup of prostitutes to talk about eye contact and body language. A lot of people were like, I don't want to be in a room full of prostitutes. And then afterwards, they had an understanding, but more importantly, they had a reaction that they could now focus on within their business that they could utilize to profit them. So I like to shock and awe. I like to bring people in that have a different way of thinking. But if I can create that wow, if I can create that trigger, and it makes people go, when you go here, be ready. And a lot of the things that people say when they talk about it is, you're going to be uncomfortable until you go home. And that's the best way to be. Because you, as an entrepreneur today, COVID, taxes, implications, new laws, patents, AI, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And if I can stick you in a room for 2 days with a maximum of 40 other entrepreneurs that are willing to be uncomfortable for that growth and benefit, and then have relationships and connections with people they never thought they would speak to, that to me is what a mastermind is. I think you said at the beginning that you had people saying that live events are dead. They're nearly right. But the way old events were done, those events are dying. The way the guy would turn up or the girl would turn up on stage, do an hour of a preset speech, get off the stage, couple of selfies, and then don't disturb them and they're out the door again. That world's gone. When you take someone on as a speaker now in an event, they become part of the event. When you go to an event, you speaking on stage for an hour is part of your commitment. The rest of your commitment is to communicate with the people in. Whenever I do a speakeasy, one of the main things, we've had a couple of people that has rubbed up the wrong way. We say to the people that we want to come in, hey, I want you to communicate on this subject for an hour, but I need you to be around to ask her questions for the day. I need you to interact with the group. I want you to go from the stage to an attendee. I want you to be part of the event, not just the icing or the little candle on the top of the cake. And I've had a few people that go, well, I'll do an hour, but then I'm gone. I don't want to talk to anyone, and I'm not answering questions. Well, the speakeasies are all about conversations. If you've got a question, and I've got someone sitting in front of you, and that's the best person that can answer your question, put your hand up, ask the question. So it's all about conversations. So the old way of doing live events, that's going away by the wayside. But live events are far from dead.
What I love about what you've just described, which I know a lot of people are still probably trying to take it all in and be like, oh, well, I need to bring in, like, don't try and repeat this. Don't try and repeat it, is that you took a risk. You talked to people. You tried to solve problems. You listened to what stood out to them. What was memorable after the event? So you said, let's do more of that way. And then you just took it to another level. And you really took Seth Godin's concept of purple cow, which most entrepreneurs have seemed to have completely forgotten. That is essential for us, is that purple cows are only purple cows for a while. And then eventually they become brown cows and everybody else is doing that activity. And so you always have to be innovating. You always have to be leveling up if you want to have a purple cow product or a purple cow brand, meaning creating something worth remarking on, creating something worth saying. I've never been to an event like this. If you haven't gone to a speakeasy, you need to go. Or if somebody says, oh, I heard about these speakeasies and then I've been, it's, oh, well, yes, absolutely, you need to be there. And I have no idea what your experience is going to be, but I know it's going to be amazing because Steve always delivers in that way. And the other thing that I took from this is, I think in our industry, we have a problem with always wanting to have the name on the stage. And that's what sells the ticket. Right? You want the biggest name on the stage. But the reality is that they often don't know how to solve the problems that your people have because they are so far removed from the actual strategy or the implementation. Yes, you may think that they know it because they own the company or they're the influencer or they're the face, but they almost always have somebody behind the scenes that is the real person that has made that strategy come to life, that knows how that works. And that person can bring way more value than the big name on the stage. And so keeping an open mind as to even who you bring in and who are you leaning on as experts, and stop relying so much on these big names and start asking the question, yes, okay, they do this really well, but who's behind that? Who's the Steve that nobody knows about that's working in the background making things happen? Because that's the person that I want to talk to. And then the other piece of this, and I talk about this from a community perspective a lot, but one of the best ways to build community is shared experiences. And shared experiences happen in entering into a place of uncertainty and having uncomfortable feelings alongside other people, and then working through that together and having those memorable experiences. I guarantee you that people who go to a speakeasy develop a depth of relationship with the other attendees that you can't develop at these other kinds of events. And now, not only do they have this depth of relationship, but they associate that depth of relationship with you.
You're 100%. We're in a planet today where connections are getting hard to get. Look at the dating apps. Thank God I've never had to be on them, but my son has shown me some of them. You're getting all of these details before you know whether or not you like them. You're basing it on superficial and basically stats that you can lie about. You can literally go on there and say that I am 8'4" and part French. No one's going to check you up on the thing. And then you stick a picture of Brad Pitt. It's all got the ability of lie. Until you actually get with someone like we did, actually meet face-to-face in an event and share a chat, share a conversation, you're not going to get to this moment. You're going to get to an artificial point where no one is. And that's wrong. I believe today, and that is one of the things that a lot of people say about not only Sims Distillery, but about the speakeasy, is that by sharing that moment of discomfort, share, like Atiba often talks about the voodoo priestess, because he was in a room with other people that all of a sudden they were confronted by this woman in a big white outfit with two other white people that she was with, you know, in the white gowns and stuff, chanting through the room. And a lot of people were like, we're just about to be talked to about voodoo. They're going to shrink our heads. They didn't know what was coming. And it was, I knew it was an uncomfortable moment. But because of that, Atiba has relationships in that room with people that he never would have been that tight with, but they shared that moment. They shared that revelation. They shared that information. They shared that time. And that's a connecting moment.
So I have one more question for you as we're talking and wrapping up here, because you do have the speakeasy events, but then you have the consistency of Sims Distillery. And I think a lot of people would say, well, that's really easy to do when it's just a one-off event. So how do you take some of those elements, or do you take some of those elements to create a consistent experience in Sims Distillery? Like, how much of what you're doing in speakeasies is similar to what you're doing in Sims Distilleries, and how do those two things really connect?
Transparency, clarity, authenticity. I hate that word authenticity, by the way, but just being real on a weekly basis to poke those that are aggravated enough to demand more of themselves. Now, if that means one week we're going to do hot seats, it means another week we're going to pick on the latest technology, how it can better you, never replace you, but better you. Bringing people in to answer your questions by simply posing, hey, what's your problem today? We had someone the other week that sold their company. What do I do with the profits? What do I do with this money now? I never, because most entrepreneurs, we chase the car and then the car stops. What do we do then? So we need to be in an environment where we can ask those questions, because the downside is 90% of the time we've got money, we've got ideas, and we're in a pub talking to the guy on the end of the bar that's never left that stall. We're getting financial advice from someone that's never had money. I made a comment the other day. I mentioned this statement earlier. I never wanted to speak on stage. I loved my days of flying around the planet and no one knowing who I was. I remember one day I was in this party in Monaco. I had put this party on and it was for one of the richest people in Russia at the time. And I had put this party on. And this guy walked past me and he looked at me and he went, "Hey, you, I forgot to give the valet my keys. Give him the key." And he threw the keys at me like I was working there, like I was security or something. And I was like, "Certainly, sir, don't worry about it." And I didn't care about that. And then later on in the event, the guy that was throwing the party invited me up onto the stage. And the guy came over because he was scared of the big guy and feels that he had upset. And I was like, "No, not at all, not at all." So I love that anonymity. But now I don't have that, but I'm still aggravated to want more from me. And so by me turning around to you and going, "Hey, what is your problem? What is your concern today?" We can be in a vulnerable environment and not sat in that pub full of, and this is where I get cancelled, poor people. Those poor people that don't try, that are scared to fail, are scared to try in case people see them, and they just want to fit in. Well, the good thing about TNC and why we could communicate so easily and why live events will never fail is because you don't go to live events because so-and-so's on stage. You go to live events to be in a room of equally weird, dysfunctional entrepreneurs that see, do, and want more. And you can now, no matter what they look like, have a conversation with someone because they're your kind of person. We always say the speakeasies are the Hogwarts for entrepreneurs. It's where weird people come around to make magic. Well, that's the same with our community. Every week we want to push and prod, but allow you to be you in an environment where you turn around and you go, "Do you know I need to make 3 mil by next year because I want to open up a school in Iowa?" And not for have everyone in the coffee shop going, "Well, that's freaking stupid. Why don't you just buy a new car? Or why don't you?" But to have our group go, "Is 3 million enough?" I remember years ago, a good friend of mine is the wonderful Jay Abraham. Love Jay. It's a long story that I won't go into, but I knew Jay for years before I knew he was the Jay Abraham. I just knew him as this old fella that I really liked chatting with. And I was very fortunate with that. But once I found out that he was the amazing Jay Abraham, you try not to shift how you actually see that person. But I had this business idea one day. And I had been to a couple of people with my business idea and they were like, "That's brilliant, Steve. That's fantastic. You're a genius. I don't have any money to invest, but that's a brilliant idea. You'll do great." I was talking to the wrong people. And I spoke to Jay one day on the phone and he went, "Come on down and pitch me." So I went down there and I gave him this PowerPoint that I'd put together and I pitched him hard. And I thought, Jay's going to love this so much. He's going to write me a check. I'm going to be in business with Jay Abraham. And at the end of my pitch, he looked at me and he was stroking his little attempt at a goatee at the time. And he looked at me and he went, "Is that it?" And I went, "What do you mean, is that it? It's brilliant. You know I'm connected. You know I can do this. You know it's a home run." And he looked at me and he went, "Yeah, but I was just thinking with who you are, what you are, how you work, who you know, I was just expecting more." And I realized I was in the wrong room. There was me pitching my idea to people that couldn't afford me, that thought I was fantastic. Now I'm in a room where people have expectations and I'm shooting too low. It's all about the room you're in. Now, as it happens, Jay turned around, cut up the plan. We took one page from a 60-something page PowerPoint, gave that idea to someone else and actually took a spread off it. Didn't even have to action it, just went to them with the idea. They did all the implementation and we just took 15%. One page, no effort, never even followed up, and we now get paycheck money. So he had seen that, but I was shooting too low. The point of a community, and I'm not trying to sell Sims Distillery, but I am trying to sell everyone here on getting into the room they need to be in. What works for you, what you need to do. If you're aggravated enough to want and demand more of you, find your room. Don't find your local coffee shop. Those people can't afford your ideas. Get into a room where people go, "Do you know I was expecting more of you?" And raise you up. Fail up and fail often to get where you need to be. You may not be a good fit for Sims Distillery, but you may be a phenomenal fit for somewhere else. But you need to find your people.
I can't think of a better way to end it than this concept of finding your room. And I think also my encouragement to you, because I've been in this situation, if you can't find the room, be the one to create it. Be the one to create the kind of room that you want to be in, which goes back to the agitation that you've experienced with communities that led you to create the one that you lead now. Because sometimes the room that you know you need, you can't find. And so you need to be the one to create it, which I know so many of the people who listen to this podcast have done, but have maybe lost sight of what that room, the original vision for that room was, or now that room is no longer for you. You're leading and serving others in that room, but you need a new room for yourself because the room you created is no longer the level of room that's pulling you up to a higher level or expecting more of you. So Steve, yeah, I know we could talk for like hours more because I have so much more I want to ask you about and you have so many more stories to share, but...
Episode 2 coming.
I know, right? But we'll leave everybody with this. What is the best way for people to get more into your world, find out about some of these awesome things that we've been talking about?
I'm really easy to find, and that's the first thing you've got to do as an entrepreneur. So if you Google Steve D. Sims, there's only one M in Sims, and don't forget the D for dashing. You can look me up on Instagram, Twitter, whatever you like, under Steve D. Sims. I'm also at stevedsims.com. Big surprise that. And you can find all the details about my community at simsdistillery.com or simsspeakeasy.com. But again, go to stevedsims.com and it'll have all those links to everything from the books to the events to the community.
Well, I know lots of people are curious. In the least, they're curious to dive in and learn a little bit more about you and get into your world. So thanks for coming to hang out, and I'm sure we'll have you back at some point.
I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
If you have an established membership, you know that retention is the name of the game. When you can keep your customers longer, you increase the lifetime value of each and every customer, which increases your profitability in your business. If you've been wanting to decrease your churn, keep your customers longer, and establish somebody in your business to help really support you on the retention journey, I want you to take a look at my Retain Group Consulting Program. This is crafted specifically to help you establish a solid retention strategy and support a leader on your team that can become the retention leader you've been looking for. Just go to joinretain.com to learn more. Hey friend, thanks for listening. If you like this episode, make sure to subscribe. Then do me a favor and leave a review letting me know what you want to hear more of. To learn more about the show or connect with me, head to shannalynn.com. That's shannalynn.com. Until next time.